Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Interesting developments in the UK, because the former British Environment Secretary George Eustace has savaged the UK's free trade deal with Australia and criticised Liz Truss's role in negotiating it. Speaking in the House of Commons, he had this to say about the deal he helped to secure.
I was in the Cabinet in 2021, and I was in this Cabinet subcommittee that argued over the Australian trade deal. For yes, there were deep arguments and differences over how we should approach this. But since I now enjoy the freedom of the backbenches, I no longer have to put such a positive gloss on what was agreed. It wasn't for lack of trying on my part. Indeed, as my old friend pointed out, there were things that we achieved. But it has to be said that overall, the truth of the matter is that the UK gave away far too much for far too little in return.
I'm joined on the line by political editor with the Financial Times, George Parker. George, good morning.
Good morning.
This is fascinating because, as he says, he's on the back benches now and he's free to say what he said. And essentially, he has described the first post-Brexit deal negotiated from scratch as little more than a dog's dinner.
No, it's quite as odd. I've taken a truth drug since he left government. And obviously, this is a barb aimed primarily at Liz Truss, who was the trade minister at the time, negotiating all this thing in a great rush. Some people claim that Liz Truss was determined to get this all sorted out so she could have a nice photo opportunity at the Sydney Harbour Bridge. But she certainly was in a rush to get it done before the G7 summit in Cornwall, which is what they did. But of course, it meant that we did it very much on Australia's own terms. And it wasn't just this was the first big sort of post-Brexit trade deal the UK did. It was pretty much the only one we've done, apart from the many that we sort of had to duplicate from our time in the EU, which were basically copy and paste jobs. This was the first real one we did. And as you say, it was a dog's breakfast.
OK, so tell me why it's a dog's breakfast.
Well, basically, this was about liberalising trade between UK and Australia, and the principal demands from the Australian side was improved access to the British agricultural market for their sheep and beef producers, which essentially we agreed to give them in exchange for better access to some of their markets in areas like Scotch whisky, for example, and professional services. But of course, what that meant was it left the British hill farmers in places like the West Country, Wales and Scotland exposed to much lower cost competition. There were complaints that some Australian standards didn't meet UK standards. And as a consequence, it's become a huge political issue. There was a by-election in a Devon seat called Tiverton and Hollison last year, which the Tories lost spectacularly. And this Australian trade deal was part of it. And basically, it was the desperation, I think, on the side of the Brexiters to show that they could do these trade deals that led them down this path of, almost going on bended knee to the Australians to get a deal across the line.
Mm-hmm. And he says that Liz Truss, when it was getting a bit sticky towards the end of the negotiation, said to the Australians, well, what do you want to make this work? And essentially gave them free rein to sign off the deal.
It doesn't sound like very canny trade negotiating tactics,
no,
does it?
To
ask your opposite numbers what they'd like and then give it to them. But that's the allegation made by George Eustace. The reason, or one of the reasons why this is such a spectacular sort of statement, really, is that George Eustace is not some sort of Ramona Tory MP. Far from it. He was one of the leading lights of the Brexit campaign. And yet here he is publicly trashing the flagship trade deal that the Brexiters did. And the truth is, there aren't many other of these trade deals on the table. The one that they promised with America is nowhere in sight. So the Australian one is essentially the only one that they've managed to pull off so far, 6 years after Brexit. And just to give you a context to this, not only was it bad in terms of damaging the upland economy of the UK, but in terms of the overall benefits to the British economy of this deal, the government's own figures suggest it will boost our national income by 0.08%. Just to put that in context, the loss of growth in the British economy caused by Brexit was 4%. So many, many times over the any benefits might be derived from this trade deal.
So, Liz Truss would have negotiated this, but George Eustace was a minister at the time and he was part of the team who delivered it. Boris Johnson clearly agreed to it as well and signed off on it. George Eustace now has come along and criticised a man called Crawford Falconer from the Department of Trade. So Liz Truss, even though she has come in for the most criticism from George Eustace, wasn't alone in signing off on this one.
No, and I don't think George Eustace emerged from this with any particular credit. As you say, he was the agriculture minister at the time. It's true that we did report, and the various newspapers reported at the time, there were tensions between the agriculture department and the trade department on this. But in the end, the deal was rushed over the line. It was signed off by a load of people, including the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, who himself, of course, was determined to prove that there was a buccaneering free trade future for Britain after Brexit. So, you know, it was basically Liz Truss and Boris Johnson were anxious to get this over the line for their own reasons. George Eustace probably should have raised the alarm bells or rung the alarm bells more vigorously than he did at the time. There's also a bit of animus there because George Eustace was a supporter of Rishi Sunak and certainly no fan of Liz Truss.
Okay, I wonder now, will Rishi Sunak reopen this deal? Is that possible?
I shouldn't imagine the Australians will be in any great rush to renegotiate the deal they've just done. And also, you know, given the recent history of Britain trying to renegotiate deals, Brexit deals that it's done, most notably with the Northern Ireland Protocol, it probably wouldn't be a great look, would it, to start unpicking things you've already agreed.
Just on the bigger picture of Brexit, you know, are people starting to join the dots now between Brexit and a faltering economy? And I'm thinking here of your own documentary. People might have seen the Financial Times documentary, which is available on YouTube. And I checked this morning, it's up to 4.4 million views at this stage. And the suggestion is that there has been a silence around Brexit from all political factions around what it is doing to the economy.
Yeah, it's been a conspiracy of silence, really, in country, almost like the sort of dirty secret that nobody really wants to talk about. You know, whether it's the Conservative Party for obvious reasons, the Labour Party because around a third of their supporters voted for Brexit. Bank of England doesn't want to talk about it. The Treasury certainly don't want to talk about it. Even some of the national broadcasters don't want to talk about it because it's just a sense it's still very raw in the country's recent history. It divided communities and families. People don't really want to talk about it, and we're lumbered with it. But there is now a discussion starting to take place, and people are starting to ask themselves, is Brexit a contributory factor for the very difficult economic situation we're in at the moment? It's certainly true that, like all other countries, Britain has been the principal drivers of this have been COVID and the war in Ukraine and soaring energy prices. But on top of that, there is undoubtedly now visible a Brexit factor in the UK. You can look at that in our trade data, in our investment data. The number of small companies now doing business with the European Union has dropped sharply. So there's definitely a Brexit factor on top of that. And that's obviously hugely embarrassing for someone like Rishi Sunak, who was himself a Brexiteer back in 2016.
And given what George Eustace has said, you know, your documentary growing in popularity day by day, do you feel that people are almost ready or are ready to have the conversation now?
I think people are just starting to have the conversation, but I think it would be entirely misleading to think that that meant that we're about suddenly to have a moment where the country turns around and says Brexit was a total disaster, let's go back into the EU or let's go back into the single market. The dynamics aren't there at the moment because the next general elections in 2024, we expect the Labour opposition, for reasons I just mentioned, don't really want to make Brexit a big topic of discussion at the election because so many of their supporters voted for Brexit. So I don't think this is going to be going back into the market for the foreseeable future. I think it is possible at the election after the next one. So we're talking about towards the end of the decade, possibly 14 or 15 years after the Brexit vote, that we might be ready to have a more realistic and honest discussion about what's just happened.
Is it possible to quantify the negative impact that Brexit has had on the economy thus far?
Well, the best figures, really, I suppose, are the government's own official forecast produced by the Independent Office for Budget Responsibility, which has estimated that in the medium term, the effects of Brexit will knock about 4% off Britain's GDP, or rather, Britain will be 4% worse off than it otherwise would have been had we not left the European Union. That's a significant amount. It's about £100 billion off the British economy, or put it another way, that's about £40 billion worth of tax revenues, which coincidentally is roughly the amount of tax revenues the government is trying to make up for in their autumn statement on Thursday. So you can see it actually is having real-time effects on the British economy.
Absolutely. Now, on Thursday of this week, the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt, is going to unveil his autumn statement. He was out at the weekend, I know, doing interviews and clearly indicating this is going to be a tough one.
It's going to be, well, he himself has described this as eye-wateringly difficult. There is a huge hole in the British economy, and you know, most of it is not attributable to the Liz Truss's disastrously short-lived premiership, but it's more to do with the fact that the British economy is going to be in a recession for 2 years. The cost of servicing all that debt that Britain's run up during the COVID crisis and now the energy crisis is now costing us huge amounts of money in interest payments as interest rates go up. So there's a huge hole to be filled in, and it's going to be filled by a mixture of tax rises that will affect everyone, although disproportionately the better off, and also basically 5 years of public sector austerity, which I think a lot of people thought we left behind after the George Osborne, David Cameron years, but that's going to be back with a vengeance. So it's going to be a very tough few years for the British economy,
it
for sure.
It certainly is, and it'll be very interesting to see whether those who are starting to join up the dots continue to do so, and those who refuse to join the dots begin to. George Parker, political editor with the Financial Times, thank you very much for joining us. Now, we're going to be talking about dental costs and the risks associated for some if they decide to go overseas. We have an example coming up. You'll hear about a woman who went to Turkey to have crowns fitted on her teeth and ended up losing all of them. We'll have the Irish Dental Association president with us after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.